This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, listening to Colonel Robert Thacker of San Clemente remember his legendary aviation career.
Well, I think by now everybody listening has gotten a sense of your personality. I get the impression that you weren't the kind of guy who was too worried about whether or not you were going to come home. It seems like maybe it never even entered your mind that you might not make it.
I can tell you right now, there was no question in my mind that they weren't going to get me.
And that's not just bravado. You really felt that then, it seems like.
Absolutely. Most people do. In fact, I don't know of anyone that in my military career, particularly during the difficulties, that thought they weren't going to make it. Most of my people were forward-looking troops as far as I was concerned. And certainly they weren't going to get me, period.
Here you had been there the day the war started for America. You had seen firsthand in very shocking fashion what had happened that day. To reach the end of the war and to realize that both of these enemies had been defeated, was that satisfying for you? What did you take from that?
I was just thankful that I could just sit down and there was no more killing going on. I just had this tremendous, tremendous relief of satisfaction that no more killings and we can live in peace, at least for a few years. I didn't have a drink. I mean, I was with my sweetheart, and I had just been assigned to the flight test division at Wright Field, which is a plum position, because I knew we were having all of this new equipment coming off the line that had to be tested, and I was going to be a part of the flight test division at Material Command. And then I took off from there. But it was the relief in of the attention that I felt. I didn't get out on the streets. I didn't do anything. I just sat down.
And I know this sounds crazy for a guy who flew so many missions in the war where there was flak coming at you and enemy fighters trying to shoot you down, circling around you like sharks in the water. But I think some people might say it takes even more guts and chutzpah to be a test pilot than it does to fly in a war. How did your wife feel about the fact that you were going to be a test pilot?
Well, I'll tell you a little side story, which you seem to think is the best part of the interview. There were some incidents. Chuck Yeager and I were in the same test pilot school there at the academy at Wright Field. And after we got out of that, it was our first operational jet fighter, the P-80, the Lockheed Shooting Star. Milo Burcham, their chief test pilot, had been killed. And Dick Bong had also been killed in the airplane. And my boss called me in and said, Thacker, I want you to take Chuck Yeager and two other pilots, go out to Lockheed and pick up five P-80s. It just killed our top ace, and then the chief test pilot had been killed in the damn thing. And I want you to fly $500 with no accidents. So we went up to Lockheed, went out on the dry lakes. In those days, it was dry lakes was the dry lakes, and that was all there was. It was tough living conditions. So we flew the 500 hours, and I briefed my people. I said, I want you to fly safely and always stay within glide distance if you flame out of one of the dry lakes. And the second day we were flying, who do you think I caught reporting to San Francisco Air Traffic Control? Yeager. But nevertheless, that the problem with the P-80 is, in those days, they had a fuel pump that was failing them. So they put an emergency fuel pump on them, and you used it for takeoff. Even in those days, you have to use a checklist. Dick Bong did not turn his emergency fuel pump on for takeoff. The main fuel pump failed, unfortunately. Dick landed in a rock quarry. But when my boss called me in, he said, you're next. So, you know.
I don't think I'd feel very good about my prospects if Dick Bong, the leading P-38 ace in the Pacific and their top test pilot.
Dick was a great guy, and he was a go-getter. 40% of all the shootdowns in World War II by fighter people was performed by only 6% of the pilots. For other words, to be a, well, Chuck Yeager got 13, so Chuck is no slouch. Not every fighter pilot is a hero, is what I'm trying to explain, or a bomber pilot either. But to be a high-scoring ace, you are exceptional. My hat is off to him.
Well, and they sure took on a lot of risk in getting all those kills.
That's what I say. I mean, you did not have to expose yourself as a fighter pilot. The high-scoring aces went after them and did the job, and my hat is off to them.
Getting back to the P-80s.
Yes.
So they say, oh, these two guys are dead. You're next. I mean, I don't think that makes you feel very good about your chances here.
No, but you're men, and that's the business you're in, and that's what you chose to do, and go do the job. Really, in those days, you did what you were told. Today, you get a lot of back talk, I guess. People ask me, how come this Betty Jo thing that you flew from Honolulu to New York, how did that happen? And I said, I was told to do it. It
wasn't your idea.
It wasn't my idea. In fact, I assigned a first lieutenant and a captain to the job. I had a lot of time in it in right field doing some experimental work with it.
Let's tell everybody what this is and then finish your story. So most people, they've heard on this program about just about every plane that America flew during World War II. I don't think any of them have ever heard of a P-82. I guess what, you take two P-51s times by two and then subtract 20? Is that how you get 82?
Yeah, well, something like that. However, the P-82 Twin Mustang is the same profile as a single fuselage a P-51, but actually it was a completely different airplane, much larger in all aspects, and it was a very good airplane. The reason that nobody wanted any part of it and the job was put off to me was it was prop driven. And everybody wanted to fly the P-80, the jet. So my job was not in the fighter section. My job was accelerated service, and I've been doing most of the work with the Twin Mustang. My boss called me in and said, no, Thacker, you do this. So they wanted me to fly from Tokyo to New York, and I said, I don't think so. It might go from Hawaii to New York nonstop, which it did, but I had to wait 3 weeks for a 20 knot tailwind. So I had to wait for a little bit of help, but we got to New York with enough fuel to my alternate, which was Boston, which was 63 gallons. So that was a good flight. It just happened to make the flight for a no news day. So I was the news for that day. So we made every front page in the country. Hawaii to New York nonstop with a fighter, 14 and a half hours. This was in February 1947.
Yeah, it must have been a slow news day in 1927, too, when Lindbergh went across the Atlantic. Did that mean something to you, having grown up idolizing Lindbergh, that here you had a feat that in some ways was a lot like what he did?
No, you're much too kind to me. Much too kind. No, Lindbergh. Lindbergh was really a genius. The Spirit of St. Louis had a fuel tank right in front of him for weight and balance problems. And he had a periscope that he looked out the side of the airplane to land it and take off. So this sort of stuff, and he was also alone, was not carrying a lot of excess baggage. So Lindbergh was one of my idols. He's, as a politician, not so good. But as an aviation enthusiast, he was a genius.
So when you made it to New York, and as you describe, a slow news day, I don't think anyone else would put it that way, but you get all this attention, it's in the papers. How special was it for you to be able to tell the story of how that plane got its name?
I was amazed at the you know, you just do what you're supposed to do, and that's the end of that, but... They wanted to know what North American, Los Angeles area, who built the airplane. And I said, Betty Jo. I've always wanted them, because I never really had an airplane, because I was always in the lead later on in my career. And so they put Betty Jo on the side, and there we are. And she waited in New York for me for 3 weeks. And kind of a cute story. one of the managers of big hotels in New York said, where's Betty Jo staying in New York? When I was waiting for a tailwind in Hawaii. And so he called Betty Jo and said, you come and blah, 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 stay at my hotel. So she went over and they put her in the honeymoon suite on the top. And she went down the next morning and said, I'm just a lieutenant colonel's wife and I can't afford this kind of accommodations. And the clerk said, Mrs. Thacker, you are guest of the hotel for the remaining time. So she had a marvelous 3 weeks in New York City as guest of the Hamilton Hotel. So that's kind of a cute story. I can't afford this. I'm only a lieutenant colonel's wife. And she couldn't, of course.
That's great. And that, besides being on a beautiful blanket that adorns your couch here in your home in San Clemente.
I signed some autographs for a friend a couple of years ago, and here came this beautiful hanging of the Betty Jo. And I said, honey, what are we going to do with this thing? So I just put it there on our divan, which I didn't think she'd allow it in the living room, because you don't see the airplanes around, do you? And she liked it, so I just leave it there.
Well, it's got her name on it. How could she argue? And that plane, the twin Mustang P-82, is in the Air Force Museum in Ohio. What does that mean to you to be able to go there if you wish, or to have other people stop by there and look at something that was a part of history and your history?
Well, it's kind of fun to have people come up, and they're so nice to me. And they say, we were Dayton, Ohio the other day, and we saw the Betty Jo in the museum, and it was just great fun. And that makes you feel good. You can't help it, you know. And the Betty Jo will be there forever.
How often are you out there playing with your model airplanes and even competing in these competitions of flying models?
Well, I've been building models since Lindbergh's time, 1927. I try and fly my model airplanes, which incidentally cruise at about 175 miles an hour. These turbines are no toys. They're really big-time stuff. I try to get out at least once a week, and I go to the big meetings at least once or twice a year.
Well, there's no question. We can tell how much you still have that bug and the love for aviation. I guess one question that I don't ask too often, but it occurs to me would be relevant here. What advice would you share with a young person who's thinking about a career in flying, whether it be for the Air Force or otherwise? Is there some advice that you typically share when you run into people at one of these model airplane shows?
Well, yes, I encourage people. I think we should have a career military people and flying aircraft. There's nothing that's going to replace the human mind in a weapon system. I don't care how sophisticated it is. And we must continue. And we must continue to support our military, particularly our pilots, because we learned real quick after December 7th, 1941, it was an air situation.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you think is really important for people to know or understand about your own experiences?
It's been a long road, actually. When you're 95, every once in a while, I sit down and reflect, and with the situation it is now, and I must admit that I'm a Republican, and I figured out the other day, Paul, that Obama is going to be my president for the rest of my life. So you're not bad if you think you're in a bad situation. How would you like to have Obama as your president for the rest of your life? And with that, we're cutting out this interview. Thank you so much for coming, and I've enjoyed it immensely.
Well, likewise, and I know how you can fix that. Why don't you just live to 100?
I had a 95th birthday party, which I paid for, which was, I must admit, first class. So I tell these clowns, when I hit my 100, you're going to pay. So this interview is over, Paul. I've said this once before.
Yes, I think you did, and this time the clock agrees with you. Colonel Robert Thacker, with a few of his stories from World War II, a bit about the record-breaking P-82 named for his wife, Betty Jo. Go see that someday in Dayton, Ohio. And he even threw in a little bonus political commentary for you. Some of you loved that, others may have grimaced, but I trust that you enjoyed, as I did, his tell-it-like-it-is approach today. I've got a few photos for you on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And I'm still on a high from the exhilarating week with Central Valley Honor Flight. We're going to talk more about that next time. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you that freedom is not free.